Chapter 79. "He's unopposed," Ronnie Pye murmured, and beside him Garrick Courtney stirred uneasily. "Have you heard him speak?" Ronnie persisted.
"No."
"He wants to throw in Natal with that bunch of Dutchmen up in the Free State and Transvaal."
"Yes, I know."
"Do you agree with him?" Garry was silent. He seemed to be engrossed with the antics of the small herd of foals in the paddock in front of them, as they chased each other on legs that seemed to have too many joints, clumsy in their fluffy baby coats. "I'm sending 20 yearlings up to the show sales in Pietermaritzburg. Should average about 400 or 500 a head, because they're all first-class animals. Be able to let you have a sizable payment on the bond."
"Oh, don't worry about that now, Garry. I didn't come out here looking for money." Ronnie offered his cigar case, and when Garry refused, he selected one himself and began preparing it carefully.
"Do you agree with this idea of a union?"
"No."
"Why not?" Ronnie did not look up from his cigar. He did not want to show his eagerness prematurely. "I fought them. LaRue, Niemand, Boerter, Smuts. I fought them, and we won. Now they're sitting up there in Pretoria, calmly plotting to take over the whole country. Not just the Free State and the Transvaal, but Natal and the Cape as well. Any Englishman who helps them is a traitor to his king and his country. He should be put up against the wall and shot."
"Yes, well, quite a few people around here think that way.
Quite a few. And yet no one is opposing Sean Courtney. He's just going to walk into the Assembly."
Garry turned and began limping slowly along the paddock fence towards the stables, and Ronnie fell in beside him.
"Seems to me, and the others, we need a good man to put against him, someone with a lot of prestige. Good war record, man who's written a book and knows what he's saying and what's going on, knows how to use words. If we could find someone like that, then we'd be happy to put up the expense money."
He struck a match and waited for the sulphur to clear before he lit his cigar and spoke through the smoke.
"Only 3 months to election time. We've got to get organized right away. He's holding a meeting at the schoolhouse next week."
Sean's political campaign, which had been ambling along mildly without causing much interest, suddenly took on new dramatic quality. His first meeting in Ladyburg was attended by most of the local population, all of them so starved for entertainment that they were prepared to listen to Sean reel off the little speech that they had already read, reported verbatim in most of the Natal newspapers. With hardy optimism, they hoped that question time might be more rewarding, and some of them had prepared queries on such momentous matters as the price of hunting licenses, the public library system, and the control of foot-and-mouth disease. At the very least, it was an opportunity to meet friends from the outlying areas. But apart from Sean's employees, friends and neighbours, others arrived at the schoolhouse and filled the first two rows of desks. All of them were young men Sean had never seen before, and he eyed them with heavy disapproval while they laughed and joked loudly during the preliminaries.
"Where did this bunch come from?" he demanded of the chairman.
"Oh, they came in on the afternoon train, all in one party.
Seems as though they're looking for trouble."
Grimly, Sean sensed in them the slightly feverish excitement of men steeling themselves to violence.
"Most of them have been on the bottle."
"Now, Sean," Ruth leaned across and laid her hand on his knee, "you must promise not to get worked up. Don't antagonize them." Sean opened his mouth to reply, then left it like that as Garry Courtney came in through the crowd around the doorway and moved across to sit with Ronnie Pye in the back row.
"Close your mouth, darling," Ruth murmured, and Sean obeyed,
then smiled and waved a greeting to his brother. Garry replied with a nod and immediately fell into deep discussion with Ronnie Pye. Amid coughing and feet shuffling, the chairman rose to introduce Sean to men who had been his schoolmates, who had drunk his brandy and hunted with him. He went on to tell them how Sean had won the Anglo-Boer War virtually single-handed, how he had brought prosperity to the district with his factory and his wattle. Then he ended with a few remarks that had Sean squirming in his seat and trying to get two fingers into his collar.
"So, ladies and gentlemen of our fair district, I give you a man of vision and foresight, a man with a heart as big as his fists, your candidate and mine, Colonel Sean Courtney."
Sean stood up smiling, to be rocked by a blast of jeers and catcalls from the front rows. The smile faded, and his fists curled into great bony hammers on the table in front of him. He scowled down on them
beginning to sweat with anger. A light tug on the tail of his coat steadied him, and his fists opened a little. He began to speak, bellowing above the shouts of, "Sit down! Speak up! Give him a chance! Stand down!" and the thunder of booted feet stamping in unison on the wooden floor. Three times in the uproar he lost the run of his speech, and had to turn to Ruth for prompting, scarlet in the face with anger and mortification, while waves of derisive laughter broke over him. He ended up reading out the last half from his notebook. It made little difference that he stumbled and lost his place repeatedly, for no one more than 3 feet away could hear a single word. He sat down, and a sudden silence descended on the hall, an air of expectancy that made Sean realize that this must have been carefully planned, and that the main entertainment was still to follow. "Mr. Courtney," at the back of the hall, Gary Courtney was on his feet, and every head was craned around towards him. "May I ask you a few questions?" Sean nodded slowly. "So, that's what it is." Gary had planned this reception. "My first question, then. Can you tell us what the name is for a man who sells his country to the enemies of his king?" "Traitor! Traitor!" howled the hecklers. "Boer!" They stood up in a mass and roared at him. The pandemonium lasted perhaps 5 minutes. "I'm taking you out of here," Ruth whispered to Ruth, and reached for her arm. But she pulled away. "No, I'm staying." "Come on, do as I tell you. This is going to get rough." "You have to carry me out first," she flared at him, angry and beautiful. Sean was about to accept the challenge, when suddenly the uproar ceased abruptly. Again all heads turned towards Garrick Courtney, where he stood ready with his next question. In the silence he grinned maliciously. "One other thing. Do you mind telling us the nationality and faith of your wife?" Sean's head jerked back. He felt the sickening physical jolt of it in his stomach, and he started to struggle to his feet. But Ruth was already standing, and she laid a hand on his shoulder to prevent him rising. "I think I will answer that one, Gary," she spoke clearly, with just that trace of huskiness in her voice. "I am a Jewess." The silence persisted. Still with her hand on Sean's shoulder, standing straight and proud beside him, she held Gary's stare across the room. Gary broke first. Flushing up along his neck, he dropped his eyes and shifted clumsily on his bad leg. Among the men in the front rows, the same guilty reaction followed her words. They glanced at each other and then away, moving awkwardly in shame. A man stood up and started down the aisle towards the door. Halfway there, he stopped and turned. "I'm sorry, missus. I didn't know there'd be any of that." And he went on towards the door. As he passed Ronnie Pye, he tossed a sovereign into his lap. Another man stood up, grinned uneasily at Ruth, and hurried out. Then, in twos and threes, the others followed him. The last of them trooped out in a bunch, and Sean noted with relish that not all of them had returned Ronnie's sovereigns. At the end of the schoolroom, Gary dithered, uncertain whether to leave or to stay, and attempt to brazen his way out of a situation he had so seriously misjudged. Sean stood up slowly and encircled Ruth's waist with one arm. He cleared his throat, for it was choked with his pride of her. "Not only that," he called, "but she's one of the best goddamn cooks in the district also." In the laughter and cheers that followed, Gary stumbled and pushed his way out of the room.